In 492 BC, the Persian king Darius I, the Great, decided to extend his empire across the Aegean Sea. The Greeks had been a source of trouble for some time for the Persians, and it was decided by Darius that needed to come to an end. His campaign against the Greeks started without serious problems, and soon many of the islands in the Aegean Sea were subdued. The Persian navy continued to the Isle of Euboea, eventually capturing it as well. Across from this island on the mainland of Greece was the city of Marathon. And it was there upon this plain that the Persians decided it was best to land for their troops and their cavalry to continue the campaign against the mainland. The Greeks ultimately lost the war. There's a bigger story in there, but a legend that came out of the Battle of Marathon was the run of a man named Pheidippides. Many of you might know that name. Pheidippides was sent to Sparta from Athens to ask the Spartans to come to the aid of the main Greek army and reinforce them. The legend has Pheidippides running 26 miles to Sparta and then dropping dead. But the reality was much different. Pheidippides actually ran more than 150 miles in 2 days from Athens to Sparta to deliver this message, and then once he had his answer, to run back to Athens. He then ran more over the course of the next 3 days, taking the message from Marathon, which was about 25 miles away from Athens, then back to Athens, which is another 25 miles, and then again back to Sparta one way, which is about 75 miles. So in the course of about 5 days, he ran close to 275 miles. From this legend came the race known as the marathon. Society around us, especially in this nation, is fascinated with sports, which means that up until recently, hundreds of millions of dollars were spent on advertising directly at sporting events with various tie-ins, promotions, and so forth. For most fans, however, it's about the physical prowess of the athletes and their vicarious connection to their efforts. They live through them, if you will. And it's also about seeing an amazing display of sportsmanship, seeing a team advance to championships and things of that nature. For the average casual observer of sports, a lot of it is simply seeing someone be able to perform at a level that most people can't. Because if we could all do it, we would all be there, wouldn't we? Now, I don't spend much time, even when sports was normally on, watching those sort of things, poring over the newspapers. I've had friends that have done that, very much a fan of all of this, and pay attention very deeply to it. But my involvement in sports is very limited. I've never been much of a sports guy. But I do like running, and that's why the story of Pheidippides has always intrigued me. I like running because it's an easy thing to do. Don't have to have a gym membership. Don't have to go to a certain place to be able to do it. Just a pair of shorts, T-shirt, and running shoes, and off you go. I ran cross-country in high school, enjoyed it on a certain level, but was never a notable runner. And it trailed off after high school. But when I got to college, the first winter break, I got a really nasty case of flu. And I actually lost about 20 pounds in a course of almost 2 weeks. Couldn't eat much of anything. And I realized that I needed to be healthier in order to do well physically with the stress of college and not have this constant worry, if you will, of being sidelined in this way. So I took up running again. And once I started doing it and realized the mileage that I was running, I decided, why not run a marathon? Now, it may not look like I still run, but I do. It's a lot slower than I used to run, and not as fast, and not as far. But nonetheless, it's still something I appreciate doing. So today we're going to focus on one lesson that the marathon means for all of us who call ourselves Christians. And that lesson is the lesson of endurance. Our calling is a calling to stay the course, to finish the race set before us. Our calling is a calling to endure. Now, that might seem obvious, especially in the case of running a marathon, that endurance is important, but probably not in the way you think. Most anyone who has run a marathon could tell you that that race is as much a test of the mind as it is the body. And in many respects, training the body was the easier part. I enjoyed that. There was nothing put on you in terms of expectations. I could just go out and run when I wanted to run. I could run as far as I wanted to run. But it's different in a marathon. You feel compelled to do your best. And it's not just a matter of running until you feel like you're done and then you quit. You have a certain distance that you're supposed to run. And so I ran 6 days a week. This was in East Texas. It could be not as cold as here in the wintertime, but it could be cold. In the summer, it wasn't so much the heat as the humidity. It was just oppressive in East Texas. Running in the rain, the wind, but nothing kept me from running. And by the time I was training for a marathon, I was running about 35 miles a week through the hilly East Texas countryside. Because I realized if I was going to be successful in completing my race, that I needed to let nothing stop my preparation. So are we, as Christians, the same way? How hard and how consistent do we train? Do we make the time in training to be a better Christian, to truly make the time? My running was a regular part of my schedule in the afternoon. How much of a priority is this training in our lives? All of these might seem like obvious questions, but they're worth re-asking ourselves from time to time. Because we know we should train, but oftentimes there's easy excuses, if you will, for something to not happen. Life gets in the way of these things, obviously, at times. But the endurance we're to have as Christians is not simply putting up with something. To train for a marathon, it's not just a matter of running. You have to do it a certain way. If you train at a slow pace, you'll tend to run at a slow pace. If you tend to run downhill, that makes it a lot easier, doesn't it? So there are things to consider with that. The endurance aspect, I mean, we can look at the last roughly three and a half months, and there are a lot of people who simply have endured the quarantines that we're under. But look at the anger and the frustration and the pent-up energy that can be behind all of that that people don't know what to do with. That's not the endurance that we're to have. Endurance is simply not putting up with something. The endurance we're to have is a will to move forward because we see something of value after the present circumstances are past. I saw value in the running that I did, even if I never did well in a marathon. There was meaning behind it in being physically in better shape, clarity of mind, and quite frankly, in looking at this, this is part of how I think Pheidippides was able to run 275 miles in 5 days. That's an astounding feat when you think about it. More importantly, it'll be how we are able to endure the world and the birth pangs of the coming tribulation. That's not just a matter of waiting things out. There has to be something behind it, or we will wear out before it's over with. Do we have firmly planted in our minds and hearts the vision of God's kingdom, so that we'll endure until it is established here? Let's begin looking at things in Scripture, and we'll start in 1 Thessalonians 5. And we'll read a few things here that Paul had to write. 1 Thessalonians 5, and in verse 14 we'll begin. He says here, "Now we exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, uphold the weak, be patient with all." He's reminding us that we're all part of a body here. The thing about a marathon is that it's you. You're not part of a team. When I ran my first marathon, I think there were about 10 of us that went from college to Dallas to run this marathon. But we weren't a team. Once we were there, we were running our own race. But that's not the calling we have, is it? We're part of a group here. It says here again to remind those, warn those who are unruly, comfort, uphold. Verse 15, "See that no one renders evil for evil to anyone, but always pursue what is both good for yourselves and for all." Pursuing is part of endurance. To pursue a goal helps to have endurance. You have to have a reason for doing things, for being a certain way, for implementing things in our lives. And so verse 16, then he says to rejoice. There's the old joke, you know, the best thing about running, It's when you stop. Do we rejoice always? Whatever God is leading us through, that can be a challenge humanly, can't it? Pray without ceasing that God is always front and center in our thoughts and in our desire to do His will, and that's a matter of enduring as well. That's the purpose we have. Look at how lost the world is around us. We have protests, and there's some very valid reasons behind those things, but look how quickly it can descend into chaos. Are we swept up with those things? Endurance is not just, again, putting up with things. It's having a greater purpose behind things. And so verse 18, he says, "In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus in you. Do not quench the Spirit. Don't despise teachings, prophecies. Test all things. Hold fast that which is good." Hold on to things of value. That can be a challenge in our calling, can't it? A challenge in life. It's always disheartening to me to see someone live a long life of a good example, and then for whatever reason, when they're older, things will change. It's sometimes a matter of just being tired. Sometimes, though, it's a longing that they've given up things and they want to enjoy something before they die, and oftentimes they can compromise God's instruction. That's not enduring. Again, that's just putting up with something until they can do something differently. This matter here, though, he talks about of verse 17, without ceasing. It's not just prayer, it's everything that we do. And we can always look back in our church history and see, again, that it's not just enduring. Look how many people give up over time. People that maybe you were baptized with. I was baptized with, I think, about, it was three or four other people. And to my knowledge, I'm the only one still attending church. That's not an uncommon thing for many of us. A few years ago, I decided I would run another marathon. This was back in Rhode Island. But I wasn't consistent in my training. I didn't put in enough time. And when you're training for a marathon, that time is mileage. You got to put in the mileage. I went and started the race. Felt reasonably well, but I knew about halfway through that I was in trouble. My left ankle began hurting. I didn't know how serious that was, and so I continued to run, pushed through the pain a little bit until about mile 21, and then I realized if I kept this up for another 5 miles, I'd probably harm that ankle on a serious level. It hurt that much. And so I stopped. How much harm do we do ourselves as Christians if our training attempts are not 100%? We can start with a flash. We can even do well for a long time. But if we don't have the training behind us, at some point we'll get tired and we may drop out. We could get 3/4 of the way to the kingdom and then suddenly it's not worth it anymore. How many people do you and I know that have done that? Going back to the first marathon I ran, it was a very exciting thing. It was a huge marathon in Dallas. White Rock Lake, it ran a course around that lake. And to be in that group of people, that crush of people, all doing the same thing, all there for the same reason that day, it was Texas winters come later, and so it was early December, but it was like a late fall day. It was warm enough to run, but not so hot that it was oppressive. It was a beautiful venue. And I had trained with my longest runs being around 14 miles. And about that time, around mile 13, 14, I began to run out of excitement for what I was doing. It felt good. I wasn't in trouble. It didn't hurt. But at that point, the running became labored. It wasn't fun anymore. But I was committed. I wanted to see this through. How long did our initial excitement last when we came into contact with the church? That can vary with everybody. Depending on your background, your history, how God calls you into the church, it can be a very exciting time, can't it? You can go a long time before the reality of the calling maybe comes upon you, before Satan really hits us hard with something. Can we recall what that was like? Or do we simply go through the motions now as being a Christian? Let's go next to Hebrews chapter 4. How have we held on? Sometimes endurance is simply hanging in there until you can regain some of that excitement, until you can refocus or regroup, as it were. Hebrews 4 and verse 14, Paul here writes, he says, "Seeing then that we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession." Hold on to it. It is something precious, isn't it? You know, one of the really interesting things, when you train on any level physically, once you achieve a certain level of fitness, it takes 6 times as long to lose that as it did to gain it. It doesn't seem like that up front, does it? We can spend months or maybe even a year. For me, in the training that I did, I spent almost a year training for that marathon. It didn't seem like much was changing, but it was interesting how long I stayed in shape after all that training. Our calling is not much different. This is why Paul says here, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but at all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. It doesn't mean he faced every possible sin mankind has ever faced. What it means is he knows what it's like to be human. The pulls of the flesh and how Satan can get under our skin at times. And he has gone through that in the same way that we have. Do we realize that? Let's go back to chapter 3, up the page or so. Chapter 3, verse 14, he says, "For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end." That second marathon that I ran, when I dropped out, I didn't get anything. I didn't get a t-shirt, didn't get a participation ribbon, I didn't get anything. I didn't finish. We can go our whole life, but at the end, if we quit, we don't get any of it, do we? That's one aspect of endurance, is to be faithful, to see it through. This is what Paul's talking about in verse 14 again. He says, to hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end, to hold on to it. I mentioned I'd lost, over the course of the whole training, from being sick until I got in really good shape for the marathon, I lost a total of about 50 pounds. And it wasn't that I was extremely overweight, I just wasn't in shape. And in the course of all that training, you end up shedding a lot of weight. And Hebrews 12, verse 1, is a great example of this on a spiritual level. Again, he writes here, "Therefore we also, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight." And it's interesting to look at how the running world has changed. Now, some of you might remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, there was a man named Jim Fix. Jim Fix is credited with facilitating or motivating the running craze that began in that time period and has since continued on. Jim Fix was in his 40s when he started running, and when he wrote his book, I think it was, I forget now the title of his book, so I won't even guess at this point, but he realized that he needed to do something to change in his life, and he decided to run. There's a greater story behind that that I won't get into, but, you know, he started out with very simple attire, very simple shoes. Back then, they didn't even have a separate category called running shoes. You go into a store now, and there's just so many choices, you almost don't know what to pick. And the materials they use are so lightweight, flexible, but they have the cushion, the support, all these different things in the shoes. There's a whole industry behind the science of having the lightest but the most effective equipment, and the basic equipment in running are your shoes. You don't want to be encumbered with weight. To lay aside every weight, you know, what do we hold on to? It's amazing what we hold on to. We can see this physically. If you don't realize how much you've held on to, just move. Right? Now suddenly you've got to empty all those shelves, all those closets, everything in the garage. Where did all this stuff come from? We hold on to things. Oh, I may need that in the future. And you put it in a little container and you put it on the shelf in the garage, and 5 years later, it's like, why in the world do I have this on the shelf? We can do that spiritually as well, to not consider what we've held on to. It should be obvious that athletes want to be the leanest, lightest they can be, so you're not pulling all this extra weight around. As Christians, we should be the same. It's a lot easier to run 26 miles with no extra weight than to run 26 miles with 30 pounds on your back. It just stands to reason. Notice verse 2 here. He says, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Now, he's our perfect example, isn't he? But look at how, if I can use the expression, light he traveled through life. There was a lot that he gave up for the particular reason he came as Messiah. I'm not talking about those things. I'm simply talking the fact that he wasn't bogged down with the cares of this life. So verse 3, for consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. And again, with a marathon, it's very easy to be weary. It's been said that the harder race is in your head. You can train your body to do certain things, but after about 15 to 20 miles, that's usually where many drop off, as I did in my second marathon. You get to a point saying, I'm done. You become weary. Now, I'm not looking for a show of hands, but anybody become weary over the course of their calling? There have been times when it gets very hard, isn't it? But what I read in this as well is that Christ is not asking us to do anything that he has not done. To me, that's always been a source of encouragement in the calling that we have. God is not a God who sits on high and says, do as I say, but he's not down here with us. The God of Scripture is much different than the pagan gods. He's right there with us. The Apostle Paul was very familiar with the Olympics. This is the time period shortly after they were instigated, 100 years or so, 200 years earlier. And so, again, in verse 1, he says to run the race with endurance that is set before us. With that in mind, let's go to Philippians chapter 3. I think he had some of these things in mind when he wrote this, because Paul talks a lot about running and endurance and staying the course. And I think he saw the analogies from the sports world around him, even in his day. So in Philippians 3, in verse 14, he wrote this. He says, I press towards the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Now, these things have shifted over the centuries. In the Roman world, when the Olympiads were first instituted, the prize for first place was a laurel wreath around your head. That doesn't sound like a very good prize, does it? You can't even hang it on your wall. It will die after a couple of days. Well, that wasn't the only thing they got. We, for a long time, lauded the idea of the amateur athlete and, you know, performing for the sheer joy of the event and all these sort of things. And so monetary compensation was actually forbidden. If you were a professional athlete, you couldn't perform in the Olympics. Well, they came to realize over the years, that's not the way it worked in the ancient world. They parlayed these successes into what we would call endorsements. They made great money off of their names when they would win these competitions. And so Paul is reminding us here that to press towards the prize of the upward call. Now, they did it for something temporary. We're doing it for something permanent, aren't we? Do we see it as a prize? Something valuable, worth having, something investing in? Because I spent a lot of time training for that first marathon I ran. How much time do we spend investing in the calling that God has given us? Paul's reminding us here that we can experience hindrances from others, but only we can make the final decision as to whether we give up or continue. Nobody told me to quit in that second marathon I ran. Nobody told me I had to finish it either. Let's go to Galatians 5. Galatians 5 and verse 7. Paul again writing, he says to the congregation at Galatia, he says, you ran well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? You were doing fine until you listened to other people. And it's not that we don't listen to anybody, but we need to be careful who we listen to. You will always have critics, and the really sad reality of the human nature is that the more you succeed, the more critics you will have. There's something about human nature that doesn't want to see someone else succeed when we won't put the effort into doing the same thing. The critics are always going to be there. You did run well. It was interesting running, especially that first marathon, because I noticed a lot of interesting things. As you're standing there before the race, you know, it's obvious to look at certain people, and you can look at certain builds and you think, well, they're in very good shape. You can see the people that seem to have done this a number of times, but until the race starts, you really don't know. I saw men and women who looked to be in great shape take off and leave, but then maybe I passed them at mile 19 or 20. They were fading fast. They didn't have the stamina, or those that dropped out. But the really humbling thing was to be about mile 22, 23, and you'd see the old women and the children pass you. Because at that point, you're simply running on sheer willpower. Let's go to Ecclesiastes 9. This verse gets quoted a lot, but I find it very interesting in light of this topic here today. Because again, in a marathon, you're not really running against anyone except yourself. Now, there are those that have endorsements and those that are trying to qualify for other larger marathons. And that's a different category. I'm not talking about that. Most people run marathons to show themselves they can do it. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 11, Solomon writes here, he says, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift. You know, it can be impressive to stand there on that starting line and the starting bell goes off, gun goes off, the clock starts running, and to see some of these people just shoot out like jackrabbits. They're gone. But you know what? That's not always the one who finishes first. He says, nor is the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, or riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. The race is ours. The calling is an individual calling. We don't have to be the fastest. We don't have to be the strongest. We don't have to be the wisest, the richest. These different categories he goes through here. We don't have to gain the recognition of all who might see us. Our calling is to finish. That's our calling. Obviously, we have to do something between now and then, but that's the ultimate goal, isn't it? To simply finish. Because the race before us is not an easy one. I mentioned the sports figures. You know, the interesting thing about anything in life, anyone, not just sports, anybody that's successful at anything in life, they make it look easy, don't they? Because they're good at it. They've done it so much, they make it look easy. Somebody watches you do something, they say, how did you do that? You know, sit down at the computer. I'm having problems with this. This won't work, or I can't get this to run. And you sit down, and then you stand up, and they say, what did you do? And sometimes you have to think, well, what did I do? Because it just becomes part of your nature. This is the calling that we have, that it's not against anyone else. It's not compared to anyone else. It's simply what God has given us to be masters of in our own way. We can finish that race if we put in enough effort. Let's go to 2 Timothy next. What have we given up? You know, this is something that people, and I encourage you not to go down this path, because sometimes people can discourage themselves. Paul asked the question earlier in Galatians 5, who hindered you? Well, sometimes we hinder ourselves the worse, more than anybody else. I have seen too many people over the course of their calling begin to wonder, what did I give up? Meaning they think they left something of value by coming into God's church. I didn't enjoy life enough. I wasn't able to experience certain things. Well, that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is, what did God protect you from? I had a teacher in art school, as an aside here, that was very proud of the fact that when she made the statement to us in one of the classes she was teaching, that she had not taken a vacation in 3 years. And I thought, how sad is that? That your life is consumed only in what you do for work. She had no other interests outside of that. We don't need to look at the calling God has given us as a life of exclusiveness in terms of we have to set ourselves apart and not enjoy life. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 1, Paul writes here, he says, "You therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus." This is another aspect of the endurance that we're to have, is that it's not just on our own sheer willpower. To be strong in Christ. Because the fight is not just ours. We couldn't do it on our own if we had to. He says, "In the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men able to teach others as well. You, therefore, must endure hardship." Anybody enthusiastic about that statement? It's not something we like to hear, is it? But we have to endure through the harder times. Anything of value is going to have challenges. Otherwise, again, anybody can do it. But to endure hardship doesn't mean you just sit there and suffer. There is something of value beyond what you're dealing with that you develop and grow in so that you can see through it. So then let me finish this verse. "Endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier. And also, if anyone competes in athletics, he is not crowned unless he competes according to the rules." You know, back when the running craze first took off, you know, it was very popular. You'd hear stories and read in newspapers of various marathon events because of all the records being set. I remember one in particular, and I forget the woman's name. I think I have it, but I don't want to say it in case it's wrong. She won a very popular marathon. I believe it was the Boston Marathon. And they realized after the fact that she cheated, she was picking up cabs along the way. She would run the course, and then she would divert. She'd pick up a cab, jump ahead several miles, get out of the cab, run more. She was way ahead of everybody. When they went back and checked all the various stations, they realized that she had not gone through certain stations. Well, of course, they took the prize away. She was ruined in terms of ever competing in races again. Nobody wanted to see her run. There are things that we have to do in our Christian calling, aren't there? There are rules, if you will, that God expects us to follow. Let's move down to verse 14 here in the same chapter. Paul again writes to Timothy, "Remind them of these things, these men that he would be teaching to lead the congregation. Charge them before the Lord not to strive about with words to no profit, to the ruin of the hearers," as we read in the sermonette. Again, who do we strive against? More than anybody, we strive against ourselves. Everybody's got their own race. Everybody's got their own pace. Everybody's got their own training schedule, their own way of doing things. You know, even strides. There's a whole science behind strides in running. And you can see some people and you think, well, that's just a ridiculous running stride. They look like they're flailing all over the place. But you know what? If they win the race, it doesn't really matter, does it? So don't strive about these things to no profit. Verse 15. "Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." There is value, and our culture has lost this to a large degree. There is huge value in accomplishing something on your own. Because you know the effort it took. And you knew the obstacles that you had to overcome. You know the time you had to put in. And you own that. Nobody can take that from you. It's no different with our calling. Be diligent. Are we diligent in our calling? It's a caution that we need to have in mind. Because it's always a possibility that we'll just get tired. I've heard that more than I would care to hear. Again, people over the years that simply say as they leave the church, I'm just tired. They've allowed Satan and the world to wear them down. Let's go to James chapter 1 next. James 1 and in verse 12. James here writes, blessed is the man who endures temptation. How do you endure temptation? Is it simply a matter of waiting it out? That's probably the worst course of action you can take. The best way to endure temptation is to do something else, to not let that feed in your mind. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive a crown of life, not a temporary crown. You know, I even got one of those medals, you know, that you can pin on your collar or whatever when I ran that first marathon. I don't have any idea where that ended up. It's gone somewhere. But it's temporary, isn't it? God is going to give us something that will last for eternity. Spiritual life, to be in his family. We will receive a crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. It's a promise. What do we have to do to fulfill that, to receive that promise? We have to endure to the end. We have to be there. We have to follow through all the way. We see this in 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 7. We're breaking into the love chapter here. That's not the thrust of what we're talking about today, but the point here is still valid for what we're covering. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 7, he says, bear all things, believe all things, hope all things, endures all things. But yet, even in keeping in mind what he's talking about here in terms of love, can you endure through love, or do you have to practice and apply love? The better way of enduring is to apply what we know, to make it of value, to be better equipped. When I first started running after I got so sick, I was running, as I said, just to know that I was in better shape. It was awful. I hadn't run in a number of years. I wasn't accustomed to the climate of East Texas and running. And so I decided, and I didn't have a watch that I wore while I was running to time myself. I just ran. I was just going to run. And I didn't even know how far I was running initially. I hadn't mapped it out to know how far. It was just the matter of doing it. And then once I realized I was doing so much, I did figure out how far different courses were, and I did start to time myself, because then at that point I had a base, didn't I? Now I was stepping it up, and our calling is very similar. I am always reassured that when God calls us, he doesn't say, here's the minimum requirement in terms of knowledge that you have to have. The minimum requirement is repentance. The minimum requirement is his desire to become like him and to realize that we're hopeless on our own. Then he can work with us, but then we develop that, don't we? Over the course of years and decades and the balance of our lives, for any of us, this is a personal reflection, look at where you were when God called you and where you are now. We should see great difference in our lives. Maybe it's not as much as we might want to see. Maybe it's not as much as we think we see in other people. But again, that's not the comparison, is it? Are we doing what we need to do so that we can endure, so that we can be strengthened? It even talks about, back in Hebrews 6, how Abraham patiently endured. Look at all the years God worked with him. Was he the same throughout all of that experience? Did he grow? Let's go to Revelation 3. There's a reminder there as Christ talked to the churches, those letters that he had John record. In Revelation 3 and verse 11, this is specifically to the church at Philadelphia, but he says, behold, I am coming quickly. Hold fast what you have. hold on to it. That's endurance, isn't it? It's making sure we don't let it go. Hold fast what you have, that no one may take your crown. Now, there's something else in there. Who can take the crown? It seems like it's at risk, but that's not what he's saying here. We have to allow it to be taken. I can't take your calling from you. No one can take your calling from you. No one can make me keep it either, can they? That's the internal nature of the marathon. We decide. God has told us what he desires. He's there to help us as we call on him, as we draw on that strength that we read about earlier. The thing about this spiritual race we're in is that it's only we can determine if we lose. No one told me when I ran that first marathon how fast I needed to run. No one told me they were disappointed I didn't do better. It was all up to me, wasn't it? But in those races, like a marathon, it's easy to think about stopping and quitting. The strongest voice, as I said, a runner has to fight against is the voice in his head. But we as Christians need to remember that God has called us to finish. And it's not him that's whispering in our ear, you're not good enough, you're not fast enough, you're not strong enough, you're not smart enough. That's Satan, or that's us, with our doubts. But God is replete in Scripture saying that he wants us there. In fact, he already calls us children. We're already heirs. We just have to finish and see it through. We also need to remember that we can't allow a bad example of someone else to discourage us. I've heard statements like this over the years. Well, if that's the kind of people that attend there, then I don't want anything to do with that. Say, okay, well, do you apply that to other areas in your life? Are you not going to drive down the highway because of some other idiot doing the wrong things on the road? It's not a consistent argument, is it? If the church was full of perfect people, then I wouldn't be here. We're all different. We're all on a different walk and a calling and a race, if you will. We can't allow ourselves or someone else to plant a thought in our minds to allow our crown to be taken away. There's a great story that comes out of one of the Summer Olympics. This is 1968, and that was a milestone Olympics for a number of different reasons, not all of them good. But there's one story. If you look at the sports historians, oftentimes they'll point to this story because of what happened with this individual. There was a marathon runner from Tanzania named John Stephen Akwari. You've probably never heard of John Stephen. He finished last in the marathon that year. Not with an awful time in terms of marathon. It was pretty bad for Olympic standards, but he still finished at 3 hours, 25 minutes, 27 seconds. What made it bad by Olympic standards is that it was an hour after the first runner crossed the finish line. That year, the number one place, the top spot, was 2 hours, 20 minutes, 26 seconds. But during the race, the reason why he finished the way he did was at about 18-mile marker, he was tired because he had not trained at that altitude. The Olympics that year was held in Mexico City, and it was a much higher altitude than he was used to running. He was tired, and he had some altitude lag, and so he fell on the course. And in falling, he seriously cut his knee and leg. He was encouraged to quit. They wanted to bandage it up. He said he wouldn't quit. He allowed his knee to be bandaged, and then he painfully resumed the race. He would run for a short distance, and then when the pain got to be too much, he would walk for a while, and then he would repeat this cycle over and over again, which is why it took him so long. The marathon event was late in the day, and the runners all finished before dark, except for John Stephen. When he finally reached the stadium, they were actually setting up for the next event. And at first, the audience didn't even realize that he was still finishing the marathon race. But they noticed him as he began to make his lap around the stadium there. He was limping as he ran. And after they realized what he was doing, why he was limping, obviously, they could see the bandage, but the fact that he was actually finishing the race, they began to applaud him. He was the last of 57 runners in that marathon. 1968 Olympics. The last of 57 sounds pretty bad, doesn't it? But there were 74 who started the race that never finished. After John Stephen finished running, he received medical care to take care of his leg and his knee. He was interviewed shortly after that, and the question was simply asked of him, "Why did you keep going?" The implication is that everybody would have understood if you had stopped. But he looked at the interviewer, and he simply responded, "You don't understand. My country did not send me 5,000 miles to start a race. They sent me to finish it." He was determined he was going to finish it. God did not call us to start a race. He has called us to finish one. Any Olympic race is a temporary achievement. Who was the number one runner in that Olympic? I don't remember. You'd have to look it up. Who was the number one runner in the last Olympics? It's temporary, isn't it? We can draw lessons from achievements like John Stephen, but it's more important to remember the imperishable crown that we're running for. We read that in 1 Corinthians 9. They do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. It's not something temporary. It's not something that people will forget in a short time. It's not something that we'll put in a box and then forget over the years. But the race before us is not an easy one either, is it? It's not something to take lightly. But again, it is a race that each of us can finish if we put forth the effort and don't give up. What have we given up in our years of being a part of the church? I asked that question earlier. We can look at the things that maybe we longed for, but what about what we've been blessed with as well? Let's go back to Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and verse 13. The disciples are asking Christ a number of questions here, and they had asked him for signs of the end of the age. Now, they didn't understand the timing, probably didn't understand it for another 20 years or so here, but that's not relevant necessarily. God or Christ was still explaining to them what to look for, and he was going down the list of different things, but I find it very interesting in verse 13 that he reminds them, he encourages them. He says, "For he who endures to the end shall be saved." Again, there is no prize for not finishing, is there? And that should not be a point of discouragement or concern or worry, but simply a reminder that we just need to see it through. The finish is all the more rewarding, knowing that you made it. You made the distance. You finished the course. Our spiritual marathon is more important than any physical marathon will be. But there are many parallels. The excitement that you have at the beginning, the easy stage of your race, as it becomes more challenging, it may seem an immense struggle just to continue at times. But we can settle into a rhythm. We can endure to the end because we see more important things on the backside. Lessons learned, challenges overcome, character developed. Let's conclude in 2 Timothy 4. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 7. Paul says, "I have fought a good fight." You know, I've been by the side of too many faithful members of the body that have realized that they're looking at the end of their lives. And sometimes there can be a concern. Have I done enough? Have I been good enough? Will I be in God's kingdom? And I don't think that's a reasonable worry to have. Because the biggest challenge is enduring to the end, seeing it through. That says a lot about our character to God. The faithfulness, the steadfastness, the willingness to stay the course. And so Paul realized this as well. He's writing this in prison, knowing probably that he will die. And so he says, "I've fought the good fight. I've finished the race. I have kept the faith. I've done everything I can." Finally, he says, verse 8, "There is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Do you long for that day? It should give us great hope and encouragement, and maybe even strength to be even more steadfast through those hard times, to know what is in store for us. I would encourage all of us to remember this matter of endurance, to finish our race and receive the reward that awaits each and every one of us. I wish you a wonderful Sabbath day.